This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us. We talk today with Michelle Siegel. She is a candidate for the 27th senatorial seat in Pennsylvania. She's running against the incumbent, Senator John Gordner. And as soon as we're finished our discussion with Michelle Siegel, we'll be hearing from the senator on his own campaign and plans for the future of the Commonwealth. Thanks for being with us, Michelle. Let's start with some background and a little bit about why you're running.
I was a youth leader in the church in my hometown here in Stevens Grove, Pennsylvania. And I had worked with these kids for a number of years. And there was a Wednesday youth group where all the kids were playing, and they were from different demographics, different ages. And we're all just standing there and we're smiling. And it was just a beautiful moment. But it just hit me like a ton of bricks about their future and making sure that their community and everything is here for them. And I went home to my husband that night and I said, I think I want to run for office. We had a long discussion and he said, if this is what you want to do, if you think that this is the best thing you could do to help the children and your community, then I support you. You know, I'm a mother of a 9-year-old little boy, and I've worked with these children in the community, and I just want to make sure that they have a secure future and that our rural communities are taken care of for generations to come.
Somebody who held this seat years ago had said to me one time, I'm not a politician. In your case, that sounds like as accurate a statement as you could get. It's not about politics. It's about what politics does for the people around you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're at a point in society where we just need to start focusing on issues and stop letting party politics divide us so much. I care about my community. That's the only reason I'm doing this. There's issues like broadband and our hospitals closing, and we need infrastructure development, and it's not getting done. And I just want to make sure that the community that I love is here for my 9-year-old little boy. Because I think a lot of us in rural feel like sometimes stuff is being taken from us a little when we see our hospitals closing, when we see our businesses closing. I just want the love I have for this area in my heart to be here for my son and his friends and for all the young people growing up.
And I've heard a lot of people complain over the years about people in Harrisburg all being lawyers, and that's not your background.
I was born and raised here, right in central Pennsylvania. I actually, one side of my family was more of small business owners. The other side of my family was more labor. So I've seen both sides of that. And, you know, I grew up playing in the woods. I was raised a lot with my grandparents because both my parents worked. So my one grandmother would take me for walks in the woods. There were trees everywhere. I get to the top of the hill the one time and I turned her and it's completely bare. There's nothing there except this water. It looked like a lake. And I turned to her and said, what is this? And she said it was death. And I knew growing up at my grandparents' house, you were not allowed to drink the water. It was very sulfuric. You were allowed to wash your hands and bathe with it, but you could not ingest it. We had to drink the Tulpehockin water that was delivered. When my grandmother finally passed away, the coal company came in and said nobody could ever live on this land again. So we were left wondering how polluted was it. My uncle and my grandfather both got sick. My grandfather got colon cancer, and he fought that into his 90s, had bowel resections. My uncle did not fare so well. He started with ulcerative colitis. He was a mechanic. His medical bills added up. He did not tell anybody in the family that this was going on. He stopped going for treatment. His colitis turned into cancer, and he died in his early 50s. So my uncle died in central Pennsylvania from drinking water. I went into environmental science background and tried to understand how an unlined coal ash pit, which was what that was at the top of the hill, and they're all over here in central Pennsylvania, got into the groundwater, and it got taken up in my grandparents' well. And I talked to a farmer recently that they're suffering from the same thing. And there's just so many issues like this that are keeping many of us rural people chronically ill. And something has to change. And that's why I went into environmental science. I have an environmental science background. I care about our farms. I care about our hunting land. I care about our rivers and our creeks that we all grow up and play in. And I want to take that to Harrisburg. And you know, the one thing that I don't think we all realize in Pennsylvania, our PA Constitution says that we have the right to clean air, water, and land for now and generations to come. And I think that that's important because we're one of the only states in the United States that have that in our Constitution. And we need to be upholding that. And we need to make sure that we're not letting industry skirt regulations that make us sick. And I don't think that that's a terribly crazy thing to want. You know, I just want this community to get back to thriving and be taken care of. And you know, I think a lot of rural people just want the government there to do some of the things, but they want us out of their, you know, personal civil liberties. And I understand that and I respect it. And that's my background. That's why I'm doing this. And you know, I didn't go to school for politics. This was never in my plan. I just felt like it's time for some change. It's time for somebody that wants to go to Harrisburg and truly represent both sides and get government back to and for the people. You know, I am a registered, you know, Democrat, but I grew up in a family of Republicans. I've seen both sides. I've seen both sides of the issue. And, you know, my family, we'd have conversations where we talk about politics and, you know, maybe we wouldn't always agree on how to get there, but we understood that there's issues that are being ignored in rural. And that's why in the end I'm doing this, because I think the issues that I'm running on, they're not red or blue issues. I call them purple issues because they're affecting all of us, regardless of what party you're registered under.
Is the purple indicative of why your website has your name in purple?
Everything is purple. Okay. I mean, I even colored my hair purple for this election.
Okay.
Everything is symbolic because my mom was like, you're really going to do this? And I'm like, everything I'm trying to do is just to show that I'm running for the people. I'm not running to represent a party. I'm not running to represent a special interest. I'm running to represent all these people that feel like Harrisburg ignores them. And I think a lot of us in rural Pennsylvania feel like that. We often feel like legislation is passed that benefits corporations or more urban areas. And I think we need a voice in Harrisburg that's going to champion us. And I'm not going to say that I can snap my fingers and make everything happen, but I can promise all of these listeners right now that I will fight. I will fight for you. I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your demographic is. I just think that we have forgotten so much that our founders wanted us to be public servants. And that's what's missing in Harrisburg right now, public service.
And people can go to your website to get the full picture on the Rural Bill of Rights that you're discussing, which obviously is
yeah.
a centerpiece of all this.
We sat down, some of the people that are volunteering to help with my campaign, and we said, what's really needs help here? What can really needs fixed in central Pennsylvania, in rural Pennsylvania? And for me, you know, the first thing was healthcare, and our hospitals are closing. So the Rural Bill of Rights says we, the rural people, deserve access to hospitals and healthcare. I mean, we see our rural hospitals closing. We see people not being covered properly with insurance, and I think that needs to change. Access to broadband and cell phone services. I mean, public transportation would bring in good jobs. I think that would be a great way to bring in some blue-collar jobs. Investment in public education. We need to understand that we have three branches. They're checks and balances. We can't just decide to take power away from the other two because we're not happy and throwing a bit of a temper tantrum. I think that's a very scary place. We have a judicial branch that I think sometimes a lot of legislators pass bills and don't understand that it would never pass the courts. And that is something that my campaign manager has really opened my eyes to, understanding what legislation can and cannot be done constitutionally. And I think we need to remember that people have rights, that the government's job is to uphold those rights.
And there are so many issues that are, you know, have been around for years, but are kind of coming more to the forefront now. And you discuss those on your website, which is Michelle Siegel for PASenate.com.
It's not been easy. It's been stressful. I'm just a mom with a husband and a son in a rural community. I didn't expect this is where I live, but sometimes God asks us to step up and do something bigger than ourselves. And that's why I'm doing this. And I welcome you all to support me this election, to bring real rural change and a real rural girl voice the Harrisburg that is desperately missing.
And that concludes the first part of our program today with Michelle Siegel, the Democratic candidate and challenger in the race for the 27th Senatorial District in Pennsylvania. We continue now with the incumbent Republican Senator John Gordner. Welcome aboard the program, Senator. Let's begin by just asking you, you've been in office now as a state senator for 17 years and almost a decade before that in the state house. What benefits does that seniority bring to your constituents?
I've been honored to serve in the Senate since 2003 and represent the people from this area. And sure, seniority does play a big part. My role as a leader in the Senate plays a big part. I have served for the past 6 years as majority whip, which puts me in the number three position below the pro tem and the majority leader. Just this week, I was running the floor, involved in a number of different meetings and discussions, and that's very helpful. It's helpful around budget time in regard to projects. When it looked like the Montour Preserve was going to close, it really was solely because I was able to get them funding for 4 years in order to keep them going until the commissioners came up with a plan. Just yesterday, the Washingtonville area got a huge grant from PennVest because I was able to work with PennVest and our representative on it in order to make sure that they actually got more of a grant than a loan to keep their sewer bills low. So there's no doubt that having seniority as well as being in a leadership position and having a seat at the table is great for the people of the 27th Senatorial District.
And geographically, I mean, you're in Berwick, but your district stretches all the way out to the edge of Snyder County and Luzerne, part of Luzerne in the other direction. Does that concern people?
I've been pleased over the years that I've been active and visible. I've been in contact with all of my different counties. Just in the past couple of weeks, I think I've been in each of my five counties twice. Just as an example for different events, regularly stay in touch with the different county commissioners and municipalities. If there are entities that have a project, make sure that I go visit and meet with them in person. This year obviously has been different with Zoom, but it's still great to get a visual of the project. And fortunately, that's not been an issue.
How far back did your desire for public office go? Is that something you had kind of aspired to, or is it was there another reason that kind of brought you into that career?
It goes back to my senior year in high school, frankly. We had a class president who basically took our class to being bankrupt, and we were going to have a horrible senior year, and he was sort of a figurehead, so with the encouragement of other people in the class, I ended up running and getting elected. And then the challenge was to then deliver and to raise money and make sure our senior year was good, which I did as a group. And at the end of that, it really gave me satisfaction about how you need to step up, get involved, make a difference, deliver on the promises, and have good results. And as a result of that, I really got the bug for public service and wanting to make a difference.
You went from practicing as an attorney to state house directly?
Yeah, so I graduated, went to Dickinson College and Dickinson Law School, came home and practiced for a while. I got involved in my community. I was president of the Berwick JCs. I was a fund drive chair for United Way. I was on the board of the Red Cross, involved with Rotary. And all of those community activities brought me into contact with a lot of folks, and then the state representative announced that he was retiring in 1991 after a huge tax increase year, and so I threw my hat in the ring in 92 and was able to be elected to the state house.
As you look ahead to the next 4 years of another term, what would be the top one or two issues that you want to address or that you really see the state as having to face?
Well, as a result of COVID and this most unusual year, it's basically the economy and jobs and making sure that people have opportunities to make a good wage with good benefits and that folks are safe and comfortable in where they go and that we make sure that our medical community and those frontline workers are getting the PPE and other materials that they need. So I've been very involved with that over the past 6-7 months, especially as it relates to our small businesses and local businesses and our chambers, our United Way. And so I think that continues to be the number one issue in making sure that we get back to where we were prior to March of 2020. But otherwise, just continuing to work with communities in regard to projects that make sense for them. In some areas, it's sewer and water. In some, it's development and just expanding the type of businesses that are there. But we've got a lot of good things happening in our valley, and we need to make sure that that continues.
Certainly, a lot of people have had concerns about the governor and in his handling of the COVID crisis. What are your thoughts on that? Has he overstepped his bounds? Are you happy with the way things have gone?
I start out answering that question whenever it's asked and saying that, look, we've never seen anything like this in 100 years, probably dating back to 1918. So there's not an easy playbook to go by. And there's no doubt that at least initially there were going to be some decisions that were going to be questioned and would need to be learned from. But back in March, the House and the Senate, the Democrats, Republicans, the governor, we all worked together. We passed about 5 bills unanimously in order to deal with schools and hospitals. But after that, the governor decided that he could ignore the legislature pretty well completely and just act as on his own, which he's pretty well been doing since April. And that's not certainly how our forefathers set up our system. They set up checks and balances and believe that the governor shouldn't be acting on his own and should be responsive to the people, and he certainly hasn't done that. So, and there's just been a lot of decisions that's been made that do not believe that they have been well thought out. They've been inconsistent type of decisions, made without data. And, why should 300 people be in a Walmart and yet there can't be 2 or 3 people in a downtown business in order to help them out? What's the difference, at a local place, whether there's a hot dog in front of an adult beverage or something else? There's just a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of changing of the rules as things go along. And that's what people are most frustrated about.
And I asked your opponent as well about these, but on the topics of reproductive rights and legalizing recreational marijuana, just tell us where you stand, and because they're going to continue to be in the news, certainly.
Well, I oppose legalization of recreational marijuana. I know the Lieutenant Governor traveled around the state, and it seems to be his biggest issue and biggest concern, and now the governor's bought into it. And unfortunately, they're talking about it basically from a revenue standpoint, and that's certainly not why you would want to legalize a drug. And I've pointed out we're actually still in an emergency order. I think we're in the 9th consecutive emergency order for the heroin and opioid epidemic dating back over 2 years. So why, when you're in this heroin and opioid epidemic, would you want to legalize a drug? And again, just in today's paper, there were several younger folks that were charged with driving under the influence of marijuana. So obviously it impairs decision-making. So I am adamantly opposed to the legalization of recreational marijuana. And look, I've been in the legislature for 28 years. I've always had the endorsement of the Pro-Life Federation. I'm a pro-life individual. We have passed, actually in the last couple of years, several pro-life bills. One had to do with Down syndrome. It would say that you could not abort a child simply because of you've been told that the child is going to have Down syndrome when born. And yet we have a governor who has vetoed every pro-life bill that we've put on the desk, and it's not acceptable. I think every life is precious, and we need to make sure that we protect those that are unable to protect themselves.
Okay. And if you could just wrap up in 30 seconds or so and, put your sales pitch out there to say, this is why I should return to represent the 27th District.
Well, again, I've been honored to have served both in the House and the Senate over the last 28 years. I've been very active in the community. This year, we have handled thousands of constituent requests and matters, a lot of them related to COVID, whether it's unemployment or PennDOT related or other issues. I'm proud to have three district offices that are available to folks. Over the last 2 years, I've done probably five or six teletown halls. We've had an average of 4,000 people that have listened in on those teletown halls on a whole different number of subjects. And it allows people to ask questions to me, do surveys so I know where people are. And I've asked them questions like the legalization of marijuana. So with another 4 years, I'll continue to be proactive to make sure that taxpayer dollars are returned to the district, but also to make sure that I fight the governor's efforts to raise taxes to keep families making those decisions at their dinner table.
And that was Senator John Gordner of the 27th District, representing most of our listening area, with the exception of Union County. He is running for re-election. Earlier we heard from his Democratic opponent, Michelle Siegel. We want to thank you both for being with us on the program today, and thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.